Hello, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. As the end of 2020 draws nearer, so too does the light at the end of the COVID tunnel. With vaccinations already underway, there's the promise of a return to normalcy. We'll be talking to a panel of Glacier Farm Media editors about what the big effects on Canadian agriculture were, what did and didn't happen as expected, and what lessons the sector has and should learn from the experience. But first, a message from our sponsor.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrientAgSolutions.ca.
And we're back. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. A bit later, we'll talk to a panel of Glacier Farm Media editors about the lessons of COVID. But first, we're joined by Market Farm's Phil Franz-Workington. He's going to tell us about the roller coaster that was grain transportation in 2020, and why, despite a rocky start, farmers have enjoyed their best grain movement year ever. Phil, what can you tell us about this roller coaster of a year?
Hi, Gord. Yeah, it was definitely not a normal year. We had protests that shut down rail lines due to pipeline protests in BC, and that led to rail closures across the country. That was in February, and everything was getting backed up at the coasts, and, you know, rail traffic was slow, and how are we going to catch up? And then March happened, COVID hit and changed everything, and that's been the story ever since. But the whole pandemic kind of put an end to the protests. They sort of moved to the sidelines as far as actually disrupting rail movement. So rail traffic the pandemic has caused its own issues, but the one thing, it has helped open up some space for moving grain, and there's been a lot of grain moving this year. Things are at a record pace, it seems, with grain moving out of the prairies to both the West Coast and to the Great Lakes to move through Thunder Bay.
They've also, it seems to me, moved a lot of grain quite early in the crop year this year, as the new year took effect in August. How important is that in terms of the grain industry and then farmers in particular? What's been the effect of that?
Yeah, it's it might end up being front loaded and things will slow down, but yeah, like you say, usually the bulk of the grain is more moved in later fall over the winter months, and we've seen a lot move already. Just looking at the Canadian Grain Commission numbers, total exports of grain out of the country have already topped 20 million tons. That's about 5 million ahead of what moved during the same time last year. And, prices are pretty good this year for what farmers are seeing. So that's all it's a good news story in the midst of a, bigger issue, world pandemic problems, but grain is moving more than usual. The fact that it has started off that way is definitely helps, because we're not going to end up with burdensome supplies. In fact, right now, grain prices, canola prices, wheat prices, everything has been quite strong lately, and that's due to concerns over we're going to run out of supplies by the end of the crop year. So we have to slow down this movement somehow, is what the markets are saying. So that's a good news story. Yeah,
and it's interesting. That brings me to another point. Now, the railways from everything I've seen from them, they seem to feel that they can keep this up. But I've also seen others that they're a bit more skeptical. Some of the industry associations in the grain trade, for example, they say they'll see it, they believe it when they see it, especially as other rail traffic's rebounding. What's your sense of what the future holds?
Yeah, I'd say take anything the railways are claiming with a grain of salt. Yeah, right now it's looking good, and they're promising that they'll be able to keep this up, and that will be great if they can. But there's so many, you know, as 2020 has shown us, there's always the unknowns out there. So, you know, over the winter, what will the weather be like? The weather could easily disrupt traffic. There's always the possibility of, you know, that pipeline situation has not gone away. You know, there could be more disruptions on that front. So there, and you know, with the pandemic, you know, the light on the at the end of the tunnel, as it were, is, you know, the more other rail traffic might be moving on the rail lines, so that could also disrupt some grain movement. If a lot has moved already, then maybe we'll switch some attention elsewhere. So there are factors that could slow that optimistic outlook down. But at the end of the day, they're making money off of moving grain, and why stop would be the sense right now. But yeah, take that with a grain of salt, because any number of things could change over the winter.
And I've seen some worries, again, from some of the industry groups and so on, that the worm already may be turning. They're particularly concerned because the car fulfillment numbers seem to be falling. Is that the first early sign of trouble, or is that just a glitch? Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that could be seen as an early sign that car fulfillment numbers coming down. The I saw the weekly the weekly numbers. I had them in front of me, but I don't right now. But yeah, they were meeting about like 60-70% of what they were the cars were being called. So that could be seen as a worrying sign. So yeah, that's definitely something to watch going forward.
And one last question, just as we see 2020 grinding down headed for the door, a general question to you in your role as a markets observer: what are you going to be watching in the new year in general?
Yeah, well, the as far as the grain movement goes, just watching if we keep up this record pace, as canola's moving out of the country at a solid pace, wheat's moving out at a good clip, barley, we've seen some pretty big barley exports. So yeah, be watching to see if that demand, offshore demand, holds up, and or on the other side, if we start to see that slow down, or as prices rise, if that takes some interest out of the market. So yeah, definitely be watching the weekly numbers on how much grain is leaving the country and how much is moving out of the prairies to export positions, and that gives a good sign of the demand out there for our commodities.
Phil, as always, you've made sense of the markets to me. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, I try. Thanks.
That was Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm. He told us about how the railways, despite all odds, came through big this year. This is Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host for this edition, Gord Gilmore. Perhaps the politest term for 2020 might be dumpster fire. But there's some hope on the horizon. One vaccine has already been approved and is in the early stages of distribution. Another is on the horizon. And many more wait in the wings. As we ponder the beginning of the end, are there lessons for Canadian agriculture to learn? Our august panel of Glacier Farm Media editors says yes. We're joined now by Lisa Gunther of Canadian Cattlemen, and Tom Button of Country Guide, Michael Rain of The Western Producer will join us in progress due to another commitment.
Lisa, I'll start with you. When this whole thing hit, what were you expecting to happen within the agriculture and food sector? How did that play out, and did it actually materialize as you saw it?
Well, I think early on there was concern about potential effects in the processing industry, and that did happen, but it was actually more severe than I expected in the packers in Alberta. I mean, it just seemed to escalate so quickly over the April long weekend. So that was kind of a big lesson early on of just how contagious this disease is in certain circumstances and settings. So
what did they learn from that? Do you think that the industry even now has a good handle on things? Are they better positioned to deal with it now than they were at the start of the outbreak?
Yeah, I think they are better positioned. For one thing, they have access to personal protective equipment such as masks. That was a big issue early on. And it was just such a new issue. We haven't dealt with a pandemic before, or just a respiratory disease that is so contagious and so deadly to some people, right? So I do think they are better positioned, not to say that there's not still challenges and risks, but they've certainly come a long way.
Now, Tom, you write primarily from a business perspective. What were you expecting looking at the sector from that perspective? How did you expect things to play out, and how did it sort of meet your script, and how did it deviate from it?
Gord, you know, when I think back to March, it just feels like a different world, doesn't it? I mean, it's hard to imagine us not knowing COVID and being able to say COVID and understanding what all we were getting into, but we didn't, did we? I mean, we really didn't. We just didn't know the first thing about it. And we looked ahead and we just didn't know. So it was March. And I know that producers in this part of the country, I'm in Ontario, but producers across the country, nobody even knew for sure if we were going to get a crop in the ground. You know, we had no idea how big this was going to be, and we didn't know how long it might last, and we didn't know, you know, how we were going to get, like, anything done, for sure. I mean, nobody knew if we were going to get seed delivered to farms. Nobody knew whether we were going to be able to get crop inputs in order to be able to have a productive year, not just a crop in the ground. And so there are all those concerns, and I want to emphasize that, I mean, for some farmers, those concerns didn't go away for a long time. If you are one of those farmers that is in horticulture, for instance, and you rely on having, you know, offshore workers come in to help you get your crop in the ground, I mean, it took a long time to get through that, and a lot of angst and anxiety and everything else. From a cash crop or like a grain and oilseed perspective, generally speaking, it was okay. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. We got the crop in the ground, we got the crop off and got crop into marketing channels. Mm-hmm. And somehow we did all that without the world blowing up. You know, one of the things that's cool, and I'd love to hear from Lisa on this in a second in terms of the livestock sector, but, you know, particularly in the crops area, a lot of the, you know, what COVID has done is pushed us in a direction that we wanted to go in anyway. You know, so we've got a lot more ability to talk like we're talking now, you know, and we're having Zoom meetings and we're having all these other ways of transmitting knowledge back and forth, and we're doing really well at that. You know, we've got a lot more electronics involved in sales and other things. And so we're able to use, in some forms anyway, we're able to use data better than we were able to use data before. So this has kind of helped us go where we wanted to go. It just gave us a push to get us over the edge. And Lisa, I don't know, is that true in the livestock sector too?
Yeah, in some ways the livestock sector was actually really well positioned to handle this, oddly. For example, this struck right at the sort of at the tail end of bull selling season, right? And yet we really didn't see that much disruption because quite a few people were used to selling animals online as sort of an extra feature to their regular in-person sales. And so they just shifted to that technology even more.
I'm going to just interject myself here as the panel moderator and note that we are joined now by the late Michael Rain, editor of the Western Producer. He's a busy fellow with many other duties. So we're pleased he could join us. Mike, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks, Gord. Apologies for being late. So,
as it goes sometimes. So the question we're discussing now, and I'm going to throw it over to you with no warning or warm up, is what were some of the things you expected to see when COVID hit that you just sort of looked at and went, okay, we're going to see trouble here and this will work out well here, that kind of thing. What was your thinking and how did it actually play out when, you know, rubber met the road, as they say?
Well, one of my biggest fears that I looked to China and what had happened with their port facilities, and they was, there were seagulls and that was about it. They shut down ports. There was very little movement to product commodities into port position or out of port position. And so that one and the some of the labor force issues in Asia as well, where the railways were closed up. And that I did not have a good feeling about that. That would have been very bad for Western Canadian ag for sure, but all of Canadian ag. And from everything from getting grain out to there's a lot of say propane and stuff moves in the east in Eastern Canada. And so energy moving around. What I hadn't counted on was that there wasn't as much energy moving around, and that. So despite what the railways have been telling us for many years that no, there's all the capacity that's necessary to move grain, suddenly we had some near record activity. And that rail capacity, they had equipment in position, they had crews in position, and the ports held together. So the result was we were able to move grain at an unprecedented rate, and that's been great for agriculture. So,
Tom, I'm going to throw the next question over to you to start with, and that is there was the former U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld who talked about the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, and I think that it's the unknown unknowns that I want to talk to you about today, and all of you actually. So do a little thinking while Tom's talking. And that is, what were the black swans that popped up that nobody was expecting, and the kind of the weak spots that emerged? I think whenever you have a stress test, you have the weak spots. What did you see, Tom?
You know, Gord, I think that the surprise to us is that there weren't very many real black swans. What did we have happen this year that compared to some of the trade war things that we've had in the last few years and international trade disputes and things like that? We had really remarkably little in the way of outside issues pressing in on agriculture at the same time. Instead, I think that what we had is you might call them white swan sorts of effects. I mean, I don't think that I would have anticipated. Like, very early on, we thought that there was a chance that more of our grocery stores were going to have a lot more trouble making sure that there was continuous supply of meats and vegetables and other things like that. And frankly, there was a little bit of a stumble at the first, but it got past that fairly quickly.
And Lisa, same question over to you. And I guess I like Tom's way of framing it. What were the black swans? What were the white swans? What were the good and bad stories that you saw?
Well, I think probably one that I wasn't really expecting early on was the hoarding. Fortunately, that was not a theme that continued through COVID, but and I suppose in a way, to me, that's been sort of the theme of COVID is just the unpredictability of people's behavior in this situation when they feel threatened or perhaps in denial or whatever, right? So to me, those are kind of the biggest black swans. But yeah, the flip side of that is that our system was able to recover and put meat back on the shelves and I guess reassure Canadians. And the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity does a survey on public trust in the food system every fall. And this year they actually found that public trust was a little bit higher in the food system among Canadians. So that was really good news in that sense.
Michael, what were your thoughts on this? Was there stuff that just showed up that you were not expecting at all?
Well, I wasn't thinking about what was going to happen to ethanol. And so, I mean, the monthly demand for U.S. ethanol and North America, worldwide ethanol, plunged during the height of COVID. And it's recovered a lot since then, but it's still down. And of course, ethanol is corn. And so that that leaks into every other bit of the commodities industries. And so that again starts, it all starts to back up, and then ethanol producers start to shut down, and the U.S. was already facing some really burdensome stocks of corn due to what was going on with China. And then when I was just about lost all hope that there was anything good going to happen, like, okay, well, corn's just going to start backing up, and that backs up into wheat, and that backs up into Western Canada and the Red River Valley on the corn side, of course. But it suddenly China and the U.S. and China seem to have got phase one of that deal out. They started some, again, stuff starts moving through the ports. Grain on the U.S. side's been moving pretty well. And things start to relax. It hasn't fixed the ethanol thing. You're still going to see, you know, Poet and all the others in the U.S. in shutdown mode, trying to recover, trying to find their feet. But the corn's loosened up. The stocks are becoming, they're still huge, but they're less burdensome.
And that's an excellent segue. And I thank you, Michael, for my next question, which I'm going to actually throw over to Lisa. I'm just going to rotate it so everybody goes first. I'm always fair that way. And that is, though, that part of the story of COVID in Canadian agriculture has been opportunity, it seems. Lisa, how's that played out, particularly in the beef sector, which is sort of your bailiwick?
Yeah, well, it's interesting what Mike talking about, sort of some of the rallies, because, of course, we saw an unexpected rally in barley this year, which is great for barley growers, not great for the feedlot sector, of course, and they were already under pressure because of everything that was going on at the packing plants. But that is how it goes in agriculture, I suppose. What's good for the crop side is not necessarily good for the livestock side. But otherwise, in terms of opportunity, I think we saw more opportunity for people direct marketing. There's more interest among consumers who want to know more about where their food is coming from. Even gardening is up tremendously in Canada, which is quite interesting. So again, just more interest, I guess, in the Canadian food sector. And so that's going to benefit anyone who is able to kind of feed into that interest and connect with consumers on a more personal level.
Great, thank you. Tom, where did you see the opportunities?
There are a lot of different ways of approaching the question, Gord, I suppose. One of the areas that I think we still don't really know about, but right now it feels pretty good, it's interest rates. Governments around the world have borrowed huge sums of money, and it's hard to see any way in which any government could really sanction fiscal policies that are going to see any sort of spike, any meaningful movement at all in interest rates, and that feels good, and I think that's helped to drive some of the interest in farmland this winter. Of course, not just strong commodity prices, but this as well. That said, one has to wonder a little bit whether there's some inflationary potential built into that idea that, you know, governments keep interest rates low for a long time because of their own debt loads, and what that will do in the open market where companies are looking to expand and increase business. So there are a lot of opportunities, I think, that are unclear right now that we're going to have to, it's going to take a little bit of smarts and a little bit of close watching as we go along to find out which way the history will go on those.
And Michael, where are you looking for the opportunities here? Where have you seen them?
Well, we've got a lot of the big opportunities, I think, are still in the export market when it comes to, as we stare at China and India and Indonesia, fairly big markets that don't always have the inventories that they like to have, just like we hoard toilet paper. There's a tendency to hoard food. And so while we've been hoarding pasta, they weren't hoarding, actually. They let some of their inventories drop down. China, again, saw some big inventory reductions. Now, some of that was in anticipation of the African swine fever issues on the pork side, and they just didn't need the feed. And however, that seems to be rebounding. Those populations appear from the outside, and all we get is sort of like the satellite view of what's going on in China. But using satellites, we can get a pretty good idea that they're actually rebuilding quickly and feed demand's up.
Fair enough. I'm going to stick with you, Michael, actually, for the last question. And that is, as we alluded to earlier, there is now a bit of light appearing at the end of the COVID tunnel. We've had some of the first vaccines arrive in Canada. It looks like more are coming. What are the lessons coming out of this that it's important for the Canadian agriculture sector to have learned? And what should we be acting on?
I think the first thing we've learned, or the thing that strikes me the most, is just how resilient we are. We need to have faith in ourselves. We need to have faith in the fact that the Canadian ag is a very strong player, strong actor. Some of the things that we may have considered to be our weaknesses, there's getting to be very few of us. We're further apart in between. And I think one of the things that we've learned is despite all of that, we can still work together. I mean, you look around at machinery dealerships. So you go in to buy parts these days, and there's a big stack of oil cases in front of you, where there's a big stack of antifreeze or DAP. And what they're doing is separating you from the parts counter. We found lots of little tiny ways to get through the day and to be safe through this. And then we found lots of big ways, being able to bring in workers. So we rely on foreign labor for a lot of our operations, on the food side, if you're in the bee business, if you're in the honey business, it's how it's done. So when it comes to vegetables and fruit, we managed to make some things work.
Great. Thank you. Tom, what do you think about that question? Where are the lessons that we needed to learn, and have we learned them?
I think it also renews for almost all of us. I think that our faith that, you know, keep the decision-making power in the hand of individual farmers. You know, as long as we've got an agriculture that's based not on grand government vision, but on farmers reacting to what's going on in the marketplace and finding a way, we're gonna be okay. I think that we all feel that way to a significant extent now, and we feel that's really helped to bring us through. The other thing, though, that I wanted to say is, gosh, Gord, you know, we started this conversation today talking about how little we knew back at the beginning of March, and before we knew what COVID is, and I'm still kind of wondering if we really know what COVID was, as we're starting to come out of it. So 5 years from now, will we feel that COVID was a big deal, or will we think that it was a bump? I don't think we really know. With Spanish flu at the end of the war, well, that was a really big First World War. That was a really big thing if you were in it at that time, but 20 years later, nobody thought about it. I just don't know. Are other issues like global trade frictions and issues along the lines of global climate change, things like that, going to swamp COVID so that we barely remember it? I just don't know. We're going to have to live a while to find out the answer to that, I think.
Lisa, what do you think? Are there lessons that have stuck here, or are you more in the Tom Button camp that maybe it's a flash in the pan?
I feel like the last year, about 5 years worth of things have happened. So in some ways it's hard to process. It's like the longest year of my life. So I'm not sure yet either, but I think to me the big lesson of this year is just the need to be adaptable. And I echo Tom's comments that we really should let farmers lead the way. They know their business better than anyone else, right? So they know how to adapt to changing circumstances. And yet at the same time, I think we've managed to keep our eye on the ball on a lot of things, like even not giving up on pushing forward in export markets. And because there's a lot of, as Mike said, there is a lot of opportunity on the grain side, but on the beef side as well. Hopefully in the new year, we can negotiate a better trade deal with the UK post-Brexit. There's all kinds of initiatives that we need to keep moving forward, but we just have to adapt how we do them in COVID, you know, and in some ways the industry has done that really well. So I think to me, that's a lesson there, adapt.
Great. Thank you. That was Lisa Gunther of Canadian Cattlemen, Tom Button of the Country Guide magazine, and Michael Rain of the Western Producer. Folks, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts with us.
Yeah, have fun editing this down, Gord. You deserve it.
I think we're all right. We'll work it out.
That's the end of another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host, Gord Gilmore, saying we hope to see you again next week, and wishing you and yours the best of the upcoming holiday season. Today's music tracks were Coming Back by Lobo Loco and Earth and Sun, and Leading Me On by Derek Clegg.
At your Nutrien Ag Solutions retail, we take seed seriously. Getting it right for your farm requires the right knowledge. That's why we operate the largest retail seed trial program in Western Canada. Our local experts can provide you with advice for balancing maturity with disease traits and getting the best seed to your crop. After all, we take your harvest seriously too. Talk to your local retail today or visit NutrienAgSolutions.ca.